Hey, good afternoon. We are back for hour number two on this Thursday, September the 14th, 2017. 13 minutes past the hour, coming up on 14 minutes. Hey, I got the date right there. Chuck Gillespie is with us in studio, and I'm sure that is not a name that is not known to you, because he was on Columbus Television for many, many years, and he is back coming up October 20th and October 22nd with a tribute to Andy Williams at the 94th Aero Squadron Restaurant. Reservations available only there or by phone, 614-237-8887, or go to chucksings.com to get tickets for the matinee, which will be on October 22nd. Now, first hour we talked about Andy Williams. This hour we're going to talk about Chuck. Chuck, how'd you break into broadcasting?
Oh my! Well, my brother had sort of preceded me. He had graduated from high school in 1965 and was immediately going into to Ohio University, but didn't really dig the athletics. He'd rather, you know, drink beer and hang out at OUB, the radio station. So he was doing all that. He had a big, deep voice and was playing music and enjoyed news. So he kind of comes out of there and goes into broadcasting and then into the Navy. But I'm seeing him do that, and I'm thinking, that looks like fun. I really, really, in my heart of hearts, wanted to be an actor. But I was afraid of that completely. And I had good, strong Midwestern parents, especially my dad, the ex-Navy guy, who would just say, yeah, what are you going to do for a living? Acting? Yeah, okay, get a job. So he's like pushing me toward career of some kind, but nothing really appealed to me. I didn't have professional people in my family, so I couldn't look to the lawyer or the doctor as role models, or the banker or the business guy. We had come from farm stock from Kentucky and Ohio, Scotch-Irish farmers, tobacco farmers. My dad was in Kentucky. So what am I going to do? Well, look at the times. We're now into 1969 when I graduate high school. Vietnam, of course, and all the rest. And so I go to Ohio State, my first visit. And I'm studying speech and broadcasting, if you will, down in the basement of Derby up there, where it used to be. But I'm also enjoying the fruits of modern pharmacological developments and enjoying what we all did, which was tune in, turn on, and drop out. I was closet hippie, like a lot of my friends were. And I wanted to just get out of school, get out. And my academics were going to hell, so within 2.5 years, I was on probation, and I got to do something. I'll go to work in radio. Well, of course, now by then I had worked campus radio and I was enjoying all that, but I was more the entertainer music radio guy. I wanted to do that. I just wanted to be on the air. Oh, God, how much fun is that? So I pitched three places. I pitched small, not so small, and a little bigger that I'd had some tangential contact with. The smallest was WFTM in Maysville, Kentucky. The medium size, if you would, was in Portsmouth, Ohio, and the bigger station was in Huntington, West Virginia, from Cincinnati, just down 52, just to keep going east. Well, the bigger markets know. The smaller market guy, this is December 26th or 7th of 1971. I remembered I was doing a play. I was doing The Fantastics with a theater group that I'd been a part of young people, and we were producing it for Christmas. And the manager of WFTM in Maysville calls my grandmother in Maysville. And he calls about my brother. Is Joe David, come and do some radio? Because he had worked for them. Well, no, he's in the Navy, but his brother is looking for radio work. Oh, yeah, well, send him his arm. I had a tape that I had done. I didn't have facilities to be engineer. I didn't have anybody who could do it for me at Derby, so I had to go over to Denison University. And a good friend of mine who's passed, who was a beautiful guy, theater director, ended up working in San Diego and all these great theaters teaching. He was working at Denison Station. It's great equipment. So I sat in and did all this mock-up radio work. And I think I sounded like Donald Duck. I was god-awful. So the guy hires me in Maysville. Within days, I'm going to Maysville to start work, and because I knew I had to quit college, I was quitting college. Live with my grandmother. My first job paid $1.70 an hour. Every 3 months, you get a 10-cent raise if you're doing a good job. It was the kind of full-service AM radio. They had an AM-FM in that market, and that's all they had, 8,000 people. The radio station was in a tobacco warehouse, world's finest tobacco market, WFTM. Maysville is the number two burley market in the world behind Lexington, and it was very active then. So I go to work. You learn every trick. It's analog. You're patching a lot. You're taping a lot. Stunts like one board, AM, FM. You're running a game on FM and a game on AM through the same board. You're running a disc jockey show on FM, AM maybe, and you're running a Reds game on FM, same board. You really had to learn, and had to learn quickly. You have a teletype machine. You're ripping and reading a lot of local news and all that. So I'm doing it all. I stayed a year. That was number one. From there to Portsmouth, 4 months. It was like a year. I mean, I did so much in 4 months. I can't believe I was only there 4 months. WPAY, Portsmouth, Ohio, country. I was doing mid-morning following Zeke Mullins and all his cornbread-eating buddies. And everybody listened to Zeke, so they were listening to me, too. In the afternoon, I was doing news calls and reading newscasts. At night, I got to do a whole season of high school basketball play-by-play, and I got to do some football. But I loved that. I wanted to do that. I had a sports background. I wanted to be a play-by-play guy, and there's nothing more exciting to a broadcaster who wants to control his element than being a one-man band doing a basketball game. You might have a second guy there to play commercials out of a cassette player, which we were doing from sight, but you're all there alone. You've got teams on both sides of the scorecard. You're keeping it all. You're saying it all. You're doing it all. Very exciting. Very exciting. And while I was there, I had three girlfriends, and I did a play. I did A Man for All Seasons. I'm 23 years old, and I'm playing Thomas Moore. Way ridiculous. But I got to do it, and they killed me at the end. They cut off my head, and my grandmother, who had never seen a play, came to see it from the farm, and she's like, "Oh, Charlie, they cut his head off!" Right from the back row. No, not really, Grandma. Shh, be quiet. Yeah, great. From there, I go to Charleston. My brother is in Charleston. He's out of the Navy by then. And this is going to be a good gig. WCHS, AM, FM television. Ooh, television. Charleston, bigger market. I'm going for crap money. Can I say crap on your air?
That's okay. We can do that.
Crap money. They had just bought, this is Rollins Broadcasting, they had just bought Orkin. So they'd bought all the bug juice and the bug people, and they're paying off all that and not paying anybody anything. But to me, I looked at it as a move up. We got to keep moving in radio. My brother's like their news director, and I'm DJing at night. Then they need a weather guy. You're not going to believe this. It's true. I started doing the noon weather for $2 a show. $2. You can't get lunch for $2. $2 a show. Then I did the 6 o'clock. Eventually, $4 a show. That's $4 a show. I have two sport coats to my name. I'm living in a trailer with my brother that we're renting up Magazine Hollow, not far from the airport, in a trailer. So I got two coats. I'm making $80 a week doing night radio. I get to do the morning, midday show, which allowed me to do the 6. I'm getting $100 a week. And they're giving me $20 for TV. I'm not making any money. I don't have any money to buy any clothes. The girl who's doing the morning is Johnny Mathis's daughter living in West Virginia. I'm not Johnny Mathis. Harry Belafonte's daughter living there. Like, why? I don't know. She's kind of a hippie. Who knows? There's a crazy time. She's got a lower third that says Sherry Belafonte's, whoever her name was, Belafonte's clothing supplied by whoever it was. And I went, can you get me that? I need that. I've got two coats. I alternate days. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, I'm wearing this coat. And Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, I'm wearing the other coat. They never did. Never did. Here's the payoff to the story in Charleston. One day, the program director, and they know I'm not happy about it. The program director comes in. I want you to meet my cousin, Bob. Bob, I'm just showing him the station. Oh, hi, Bob. I'm Chuck. Yeah, how you doing? Yeah, okay. Good-looking guy. He looks around and leaves. Well, the next day I was fired. And Bob took my job on both TV and radio. And Bob became Bob Grossi, who did weather at Channel 10 for a number of years and worked for WBNS Radio in Columbus. I go back to college years after this, in 1977, and I go looking for a part-time radio job. And I go into BNS. And their studio used to be a little elevated into this office. You walk into an office, like the newsroom, and like up another foot or two, there's this glass wall in the studio, the DJ's back there. And I stand there and go, I know you. You know me. And he looks at me like, oh, yeah, wow. Because, of course, I never saw him again after I was canned in Charleston. He ended up being quite a guy, and he had a successful advertising agency in Columbus. He's retired now, but super, super sweet. But those were the first three gigs, and the first place I was fired. I was fired maybe five times in radio, six. I don't know. The last time was the worst. The worst. I mooned the University of Dayton.
You did?
Yes, I did.
Oh, man.
I got pretty frustrated.
That must have been a tough job.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It was. We were trying. I was asked to do a, I was asked as a programmer to come in and do adult radio with kids, college students, on air, jockeying an adult contemporary, easy adult contemporary format. And for those of you who might not know, at that time, it would have been the Carpenters, you know. Just those acts, all of those easy, soft pop hit acts. And doing it with kids. So I take the kids off the air completely. And I voice track rudimentarily then. It's much different now, digital, but I was doing this analog voice tracking. And I also brought in a couple of local people. But the university would always jump up and down and scream about everything we were doing wrong. Well, right behind our building was where, and I'm really embarrassed to say this, and you're going to hate me, but there was where the retired priests lived and where some of the older priests would go and spend their last days. It was a big building. And other priests would live there, and I just, it wasn't them specifically. I just jumped up on the register one day and shot the moon. And somebody actually saw it and told the GM, and they said, get rid of that guy. He's nuts. And they're right. I was. I had to get away from radio. And I was finally so blessed when I was doing radio and another job I was fired from, but doing radio for Channel, oh my gosh, it's Dayton, their big station. They had a TV as well. I got to do part-time TV, and that started the whole TV thing. I'm doing part-time television, like one day a week weather, yet I got to meet the weather guy. He told me how I can get educated, how I can get a degree through the mail. Okay, I want to do this. I left the radio world, which was smoky and dark and dirty, and I walked into the light. TV, it's light, it's pastel. It's TV. I thought, this is for me. That's what I want to do. And then I did. It took 3 years. I got an associate's degree in meteorology. And then I got lucky. I got the very first Channel 10 weekend morning show that they ever did with Paula Toady, who went to Cincinnati, and Kurt Ludlow, who's now back at 6 doing mornings. And they needed a weather person, but they needed somebody who only would work the two weekend mornings and nothing else. Because they had like a three-person weather staff, not like today when they all have bigger staffs. So they trolled around, and I auditioned for it. They put me in front of their key, and I was nervous as a cat on a day with terrible severe weather. And Mike Davis was there, and their key was not next to the board. I was used to touching a board. Well, you were 3 feet away from it. So if you spatially didn't move your arms right, well, God, you'd look like a ridiculous. So I was nervous. But the guy went, yeah, you got the job, whatever. My hair was thinning. The only thing he ever told me was, don't turn sideways. I can see through your head. Okay, thank you. Good advice. And I started that. I did that for 2 years. And they would let me do some day part fill in. I worked with Andrea and Dave Kaler and got to know that class of that station. Mike Gleason, remember him?
Was Holbrook there at that time?
Yes.
He was still doing weather? Or
he was doing that some gardening things. I forget exactly. He was doing mostly the gardening.
Went to the gardening there after a
mostly
while.
Mostly just the gardening thing. But such a sweet man, a very, very nice guy. Enjoyed the time with him. The morning weather guy was Tom Sorrells, who's a chief now in Orlando, and I've got to see him since I've moved to Central Florida. It's fun. And he's very successful down in Florida. This is how long ago it was. The morning show, the weekday morning show, was Tom doing weather. Penny Moore and Jerry Revish. That's how long ago it was. But 2 years, that wasn't, and there was nothing for me to do more. And then I looked and found the weekend steady evening trick on Channel 2, ABC affiliate Hearthstone, good company at the time, in Dayton. I did that. That's where I was living. I did that for 2 years because I was commuting over from Dayton every week to do the TV at Channel 10. And then the luck of all luck, Scott, this story is ridiculous, but it's true. I'm 4 years into doing weather somewhere, and I come back to Ohio State to take a few classes, synoptic meteorology class, try to learn some more. And there's a guy in the class who discovers that I'm doing it too, and he's doing it. In fact, he's the morning man at Channel 6. And he says to me, you know, we got a problem at 6. What? Well, Tibbs. Yeah, well, that was Tibbs. What's the problem? Well, our weekender is a school teacher. It's a nice guy and all, but during the school year, we can't take any time off. He can't work. We have no, I can't take a time off during anything but school. Oh, wow. Would you consider coming over and talking? Because if you're available during the week, you could do that. I go over and talk to them, and they like me, and they say, yeah, okay, we'll try you. They give me a day. They give me 2 days. Then he takes a vacation. Yeah. Then he takes this is like 3 weeks or a month into this relationship. He goes on a vacation, and I'm doing his week. He calls them. My God, this is true. He calls them from Monterey, California. Hi. Yeah, I'm not coming back. And I never forget the news director and the general manager are standing there. The late general manager was a really nice guy. And they're standing there talking to each other. And I'm jumping up and down in the middle as they're going, what do we do now? I don't know. Do you know anybody? I don't know anybody. What do we do? And I'm bouncing, hey, me, boo, boo, who, look at me, look at me. And they went, I guess you could do it. Yeah, well, no kidding. That's what I've been looking for. And that started 9 years.
And what year was that?
That I started there in 1996, I'm pretty sure.
In Columbus, in the 80s, it seemed like Channel 4, WCMH, they were on top. They had Jimmy Crum and Doug and Mona.
Who was one of the great guys. I loved Jimmy Crum.
Great.
He played golf at his thing, and I got to play with him several times. We would see each other. I'll let you get back. I'm sorry. I'll interrupt with a Crum story. Just brief. I would see him once a year because would get this freebie to Scioto Downs. They would have this press night, which was a heck of a party. They would throw a great steak and alcohol party for all of the media who might have some tangential relationship to him. And I'd show up, of course, because it was a nice free dinner. And Jimmy would be there. And he and I developed this conversational relationship because I just had all the respect in the world. And that was the bulk of when it started for him, he's shooting film. He's getting film developed. The difficulty of producing a sports show night to night, people have no understanding of how hard that was to get film cut, to get it timed, and to get your shows built. Not like digital today where you hit three buttons and you got it all.
And he did it for a long time. So he's over at Channel 4. Doug and Mona come. All of a sudden, Channel 4 is all the talk. And then Mona and Doug get a little rocky.
I hear, yeah.
Yeah, I hear that.
I wasn't there during that era.
Didn't end well. But Mona goes over to Channel 10.
Yeah, I was there when she was a 10.
Yeah, and then all of the sudden, Mona Scott, nice woman.
Very nice woman.
A lot of Marianne Michaels, who is from this area, who worked at Channel 4 in the mornings era.
Of course, she knew me. I knew her.
Yeah, she has spoken very highly of Mona Scott and all the nice things that she did.
You know, some of those people were absolutely the nicest people I ever met. And by virtue of working with them more, maybe I have a different opinion or a stronger opinion. And this is definitely not news. But Andrea Cameron was as nice a person as I've ever met in television. She was a superstar for them, and I'm sure was making a tremendous amount of money. But she always had a kind word, even for the weekender, even for the guys she rarely saw. You could engage her in an interesting, meaningful conversation, and she was interested in you. Terrific. Great upbringing. And more power to her. She lives in Santa Barbara. She's got to retire early. It's terrible. Tough life.
Having a nice life.
Tough.
Enjoying it.
I don't know how she does it.
So Channel 10 then gets Mona Scott, and all of a sudden they've got this Dave Kaler comes on, and Angela Pace comes over there for whatever reason that was, and they take the lead, and they seemingly have that for a long, long time, until sometimes it played on what the prime time of the network was, if people stuck around to watch whatever was going on. But for some reason, since the inception, Channel 6, WTVN, and then became WSYX, to this day, no matter what ABC network is doing, does not fare well in the Columbus market. What is the reason?
Oh, boy, I don't. I can't tell you about today's setup. I really don't know.
When you were there, what was
that? Well, I just think, they were spending less money for talent. They didn't want to spend a lot of money for talent, and you get what you pay for in this world. The lead anchor costs at 6 Fox, and they were simulcasting a lot by the second half of when I was there. They split it, but the costs for their anchors comparatively to the costs for Channel 10s were day and night. Channel 10 was paying top dollar, and I think continues to, because they had a big revenue source behind them of the newspaper. Now, of course, that's changed a lot. They've divested. They are owned by different people. It's a different kind of a world now. But still, they understood to be a heritage station, and in television, there are heritage stations in just about every market. One of the subliminal definitions of heritage is you're going to have the best talent by virtue of the fact that you're going to pay for the best talent. And I think across the board, their pay per talent comparatively to the others has no question. There was a point when I was at 6 where they released 3 anchors. They released a husband and wife anchor. They released another female anchor who had been there quite a while and I had worked with in Dayton, a really terrific lady. And they'd released another male anchor and they replaced those 4 anchors with 2. And the assumption in the building, and I could be wrong, but it was just an assumption, was that they were probably saving hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, what has happened to those 2? They're both successful now, but they were young at the time, and it has taken time for them. One is now recently the lead anchor at Channel 10, female, and the other is a lead anchor in Cleveland. Good guy. I worked with him in the mornings for a while. But I think that's it. And it's the company. It's the in-house relationship. I remember when I was briefly at 10, everybody was treated very, very, very well. And I was not mistreated when I was with Sinclair Broadcasting. But it was a different animal. Different animal. Sinclair's political aspirations had to be pressed into the local, which always rubbed the newsrooms the wrong way. We had to run editorials that were, not everybody's cup of tea. And they had to come, they came from corporate. That wasn't your general manager standing up and saying, we need that new park. It wasn't that. It was something quite different. So it's just a whole different bag. But broadcasting has totally changed. The Clear Channel phenomenon, what has become iHeart. And it's taken thousands of smaller market or even medium market broadcasters and put them out of work. I was one of them.
When you're there, this is before the beginning, before YouTube, before internet really gets a hold. So television is still top dog big time.
Yes.
Are you, because I think...
And newspapers, of course.
And newspapers. I think when people watch the 11 o'clock news, they're watching for the weather 90% of the time. It might be a small bit, but it's not it's not the local news story in Columbus, Ohio. Right. Certainly not in Marion. That's not what we're watching for. We're watching for the weather. Were you competitive with the other stations? Want to get that first?
We had really good people. And yes, they were. And competitive enough for them to be plucked and taken to other places to do other things. Mike Bettis, who I was instrumental in getting from Dayton, because I had worked with him in Dayton briefly, who had graduated from Ohio State not that long before and worked in Dayton. We got him at Channel 6. He was our weekender. And now he's, if not the lead the face of one of the top four or five faces of the Weather Channel, and has been for a number of years. Terrific broadcaster, great guy. Chris Bradley, bless his heart. We hope he's doing better. I think he has a donor for the cancer that we probably all know about, a bone marrow donor. But he had worked, he came and worked at Six for a handful of years before he was plucked by Channel 10. Now, in his case, and it's not, I'm not letting something out of the bag. In his case, some of it was relationship. But in broadcasting, if you build relationships with people you've worked for prior and they liked your work, it only works to your benefit. His hiring from Dayton to Columbus was predicated on having worked with the news director previously. From Channel 6, he goes to Channel 10. The Channel 10 general manager had been his general manager at WXYZ in Detroit. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's one of the ways you can move up, is to network yourself fully with the people around you. My brother is a tremendous networker, still a working broadcaster. He's 70 and does news in Charlotte, North Carolina. It takes all that if you want to really push yourself up the ladder. I started so late in the world of broadcasting that by the time I was doing mornings at Channel 6, I was already in my upper 40s. I turned 50 there. And started to worry a bit about what happens next, because I didn't think a 50-year-old was going to get a job at another market. And I wasn't real sure how long I was going to be kept there, since I didn't work with a contract the last 6 years of my employment, most of it. I had some advice from a guy who came on and was a fellow who had been a banker and started a business late in life after 50. He said, look, you don't have too many years to kind of change. If you're going to change, maybe change now. And I was lucky. The American Cancer Society plucked me and asked me to be a corporate relations director for the state. I drove all over the state and carried the message of wellness. It was a great job. It was not TV or radio, but it was, I thought, important. And I thought, I'm doing something really meaningful. I'm paid better, which nobody believed, but I was. And I can maybe do this until I want to retire. And I guess 2 years was long enough, because they laid everybody off because they had a shortfall in their model for fundraising. I had to get caught up in the fundraising world of it. And their model, which is Relay for Life, nationally during then, and I'm not speaking about now, if you're listening and you're with the Cancer Society and you're thinking, oh, we're great. I'm talking about that time then with the Ohio only. I'm not talking about the country. But the country as well was realizing there was decay in the model of Relay for Life as a national annual fundraising machine. And let's face it, it is. And that's what it was there for. Just like Komen comes to every major market and has relationships with the broadcasters and everybody else and has a race. I'm not talking about why. I'm talking about what it is. It's a machine for revenue generation. So they couldn't afford us. They blew us up. Then I had to go back to radio. And I did, fortunately. TVN, the cluster of radio stations. They call it a cluster when you have, when at the time Clear Channel would own 6, 7, 8 stations in a market. iHeart now has the same stations. And they were intrigued. I had a really long resume, and there were a lot more than I'd mentioned earlier. And they said, yeah, cool, and you've been in town, whatever. And so they were doing a music station, like an AC station, 93.3. And I got on there to do afternoons. And not long after I'm involved there, the program director of WTVN invites me to be considered to do some part-time work on TVN. And that part-time work would be filling in for Bob Connors as a broadcaster. First in my life, really, professionally, that kind of a job, full-service morning radio, was the nirvana, the Valhalla of radio is to get in that seat and feel comfortable being, you know, a Brian Williams on radio, where you have the guy in Afghanistan with a report, you've got weather, you've got to have severe weather. What about them bucks? Let's talk about it. We've got the woman coming in from the Heart Fund. We're going to help you find a kitty. Some of the great broadcasters, the Wally Phillipses of Chicago and the others who did full-service radio, were idols. This is it. Stan Matlock in Cincinnati. Jim Scott. They bring it all together in a great package every day. And they make a really good living. So I got to fill in for him for 2 years, and I actually was kind of on a track to become Bob as he would transition away and finally retire. But iHeartRadio, Clear Channel was having massive corporate layoffs, and I was laid off. So I faced all that, several important layoffs in a 4-year period, and ended up doing things that I didn't like and wasn't very good at, which helped me make the transition to music full time. It was an easy choice to involve myself in a career that had opportunity. It's hard to face opportunity sometimes when you're older and you're changing. The opportunities are much lessened, unless you just want to sell. There's always a need for somebody to sell something, a car, furniture, timeshares, whatever it is.
Chuck Gillespie is our guest, and don't forget, October the 20th, 94th, Aero Squadron Restaurant in Columbus, tribute to Andy Williams. 614-237-8887 is the number you want to call. Another show on October the 22nd, same place. Tickets for matinee only are available at chucksings.com. And with any Andy Williams show, you knew it was coming, Moon River.
Oh, yeah.
But Chuck Gillespie doing Moon River. Here we go.
Audrey Hepburn, it was written for her in that small voice. And here's my version.
Moon River, wider than a mile, I'm crossing you in style someday. Oh, dream maker, you heartbreaker, wherever you're going, I'm going your way. Drifters off to see the world, there's such a lot of world to see. We're after the same rainbows and waiting round the bend, my huckleberry friend. Moon River and me.
At great expense, the Chuck Gillespie Choir.
Of the all-time greats, without question, Moon River, performed by Chuck Gillespie. Again, October 20th and October 22nd at the 94th Aero Squadron Restaurant in Columbus. See, live radio. We can't edit that out. You are not going to want to miss this. October 20th and October 22nd. Worst mistake you ever made on the air?
Oh, wow. That's a heck of a good question. Was it a mistake? No, the worst. I can't really think of like a vocal thing or saying something wrong or having a malaprop. The worst experience, though, in a studio was having an anxiety attack doing the weather. And I had a period of time in the morning. And I'll tell you, kids, if you have to get up early and be on TV, be sure you have all of those bathroom things taken care of. I mean, the big ones. Get them out of the way, especially if you're a coffee drinker. So you're chugging coffee, you're in a tight suit, and you've got that issue. Anxiety. Standing in the key, I had to stand in the key and do the weather. And I would get to the point where I'm having an anxiety attack right on the air. I continue to talk. I step aside out of the key and bend, literally have to bend over the monitor, start unloosening my belt, and I'm continuing to talk and do the weather.
Mm.
Go back, get over with, get back in the key, maybe not. Get over, get it done, and I'm sitting there. Come back, sit next to Terry. Bless her heart, she understood. She was married to a man, too, you know. We have our problems. And I sat down, and we go on with the show, and I mean, I'm sitting there, and it's like I have to have it, like, wide open in order to try to breathe again. Folks who have anxiety issues, I'm so sorry. Thank God that all ended. That period in my life kind of ended. But it was partly getting up at 2:30 in the morning, drinking a lot of coffee, not getting number two done, and things happen. We also had, while I'm doing the weather one day, a friend of mine, our camera operator, had a heart attack right there and just dropped over right in front of me. Not on camera. He was, unfortunately, but he's laying 4 feet away. And we just went on with it. And then, you know, we went to commercial and the paramedics were there working on him. And I had to go back in the key and do a weather forecast while they gurneyed him. Everything turned out all right. But stuff happens. I mean, I did the most embarrassing thing was in radio. I did a basketball remote broadcast in Ashland, Kentucky, Portsmouth against Ashland, two really big programs, big schools. Great big Paul Blazer High School. I'm thrilled to be there. It's going to be a dial-up phone line connection. It's just me. I got no engineer. I'm right there at ringside, right there at center court. Tip-off, exciting, overtime, great game. I'm calling the game of my life. I'm on it. This is going to get me a job. There wasn't no ESPN, I don't know, somewhere. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. It's over. It's no cell phone. I've got to go to the pay phone to call back to the station, because there's no way for them to tell me we've got your signal or not. They're just on time cues. I keep woofing them in radio. We thing call woof, where we go, yeah, we're gonna take it. I'm gonna start the opening in 5 minutes from Mark woof, and then in 5 minutes they start the opening, and then 20 seconds later you start to talk. That's kind of how you do it. You had to time it out. I get the guy on the phone. I'm telling you, if it was as exciting for you as it was for me, because that was the most exciting game I ever thought I could broadcast it. I'm just so excited. It was wonderful. And the guy went, I don't know. We lost you 3 minutes into the show. I flatlined three in. So that was the worst. That was the worst of it.
Yeah.
That was the worst. I've been lucky. I mean, I've been lucky. Knock on wood, I have not had on-camera malaprops, and we talked a lot. I would talk a lot with Terry. It was just the two of us, and I would be reading the news, and I would be doing shtickola and bouncing around and exercising with Richard Simmons or cooking with somebody, and things could have come out, but I'm a pretty good editor.
As the meteorologist, a lot of pressure, because you can clean out a grocery store in a second.
I just came from Florida. You got that right.
What do you put a lot of pressure or thought into that?
No, I'll tell you, this was always my take. I'm not an anti-meteorologist, but I maybe I'm not typical in a way. I always assumed that you as the viewer, or on radio, but you as the viewer, would get a weather forecast in multiple ways through your day. You're going to get it from radio. You're going to get it out of the newspaper if you read the paper. You're going to get it on your tablet, on your phone, on your this, on your iPad. You have and basically it's all the same forecast. We're all preaching from the same hymnal. I'm not coming out and tell you it's going to snow while the other guy says it's going to be 65 degrees. It's not happening. So because you're getting it from multiple sourcing, I thought, you know, what's the difference? The difference is the messenger, not the message. They went through periods, and they still do, where they want the white shirt and the striped tie. It's all about looking like a scientist. But on TV, morning TV especially, which is infotainment, and fans, it really is, we want you for 10 minutes or 15 minutes while you're getting ready, but we also want some long-form listening. We want you to stick around. And if we're just beating you up with facts for 30 minutes or 40 minutes and you're watching it all, either you're in a coma or you're not really watching it. We want to be able to talk to you. We want you to talk to us. We want it to be infotaining to you, that you'll sit and watch. The whole thing the Foxes and the MSNBCs do, it's kind of infotainment. They want you to be there. So that was always my take on it, and I never felt the pressure. I really didn't. In fact, one day as a spoof, my son had a game that had a target. You'd throw magnets on the target, and it had a little bear. And the little bear in each of the slots around the circle had a different weather situation. I don't know what the game was. I don't care, but I thought, this is perfect. I took it. I put it on a back wall. I said, okay, I want you today to come with me, and I want to show you how I make the forecast. Come on. We got the handheld. We're walking back there. There it is. And I take the dart, and I throw at the dart and hit the wall. And I go, oh, look, it's going to be sunny today. Terry, that's the weather. Boom, back to you. I never took myself that seriously. I wanted to entertain you through the cast. And for the folks who listened, I did, and I think that's why they remember me.
Do you miss broadcasting?
In the day-to-day world, I miss the relationship to the market. I miss that contact. I miss the need to be up to speed on the world around you. But in comparative to what I'm attempting to do when I'm actually performing, I mean, the sitting at a computer and getting the gigs or talking to people is, you know, it's work. It's admin work that isn't fun. But when I crack the microphone and I start to do my show or sing with a band or in some other way perform, it's more exciting than doing a television weather show. I wanted to be a host of a variety TV show. I wanted to do that in local TV. It didn't have to be national, but I wanted to be Bob Braun or Paul Dixon in Cincinnati or even Beckman, who did a show like that in Columbus. I thought that's the ideal. And I took that and tried to morph myself into it and then create that while I was doing semi-serious TV news. And it didn't always play, but it generally played. I didn't play the clown. I didn't talk down to people. I just tried to have a sense of humor about our work and a lightness because, you know, it's not heavy lifting. I'm not trying to solve the world's problems. I'm telling you if you need a coat. So chill. Mm-hmm. Take an umbrella and then we'll be happy. Now let's talk about something else.
Any regrets?
Sure, we all have them. I mean, we all have personal regrets about places I should have stayed longer, could have stayed longer. I went to New York to be an actor, but I did that late in life, in my late 20s. I kind of regret I didn't do it when I was 19 or 20. I regret not having the insight in my personality that I gained later that I didn't have as kind of a doofus at 19 or 20. I regret really enjoying pizza and beer too much for too many years and being just a chub central. I regret that. I regret the period during radio, early radio especially, when I thought my, something didn't stink, that I thought it was really hot to trot and cool. When you get through that, when you find out who you are and you finally get through that and you treat everybody nicely and the same and just try to entertain and fulfill your function, we're all much better off as people. So I don't regret where I am today, though, at all.
It's been a pleasure the last 2 hours with Chuck Gillespie. I'm sure you remember him. Channel 6, Channel 10, WSYX, WBNS, the weatherman, the meteorologist, and don't forget, do not forget, you won't want to miss it, the tribute to Andy Williams, Chuck Gillespie, October the 20th, dinner show, 94th Aero Squadron Restaurant in Columbus, and a matinee on October 22nd. If you would like tickets to the show on October 20th, 614-237-8887. If you want tickets to the matinee, chucksings.com.
And let me just mention, those tickets have been on sale a while, and they are selling well. I only have 100 seats for the dinner show and 90 seats for the matinee. So make your decision soon. It's only, you know, and I'll be back in town in a month to do it. So, you know, give me a call, Scott.
Well, I'm glad you made the trip up here today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed it, and I hope to make it down to one of the shows. WWGH Radio, streaming all over the world. WWGH1071.com. Archived programs. If you want to listen to this again or anything we've done since 2016, just go to the net. Also, download the free TuneIn app, and you can listen on any tablet, smartphone, mobile device. We're done for this day. Stay tuned for much more programming. This is Scott Spears, heading for the dugout.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place.